Translation, Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod, second only to Lord Vishnu, is self-sufficient, although he has nothing to aspire for in the material world. For the benefit of those in the material world, he's always busily engaged everywhere, and is accompanied by his dangerous energies by Goddess Kali and Goddess Durga. For our part, Lord Shiva is known as the greatest devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is known as the best of all types of Vaishnavas. Consequently, Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava Sampradaya, the Siddha succession known as the Rudra Sampradaya. Just as there is a Brahma Sampradaya coming directly from Lord Brahma, the Rudra Sampradaya comes directly from Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is one of the 12 great personalities, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Swayam Bhuva, Narada Sambhu, Kumara, Kapala, Manu, Palara, Janaka, Vishnu, Bhava, Vyasthi, Vyam. The 12 great personalities are great authorities in preaching God consciousness. The name Sambhu is Lord Shiva. His succession is also known as the Krishna Sami Sampradaya. And for Krishna Sami Sampradaya is also known as the Vallabha Sampradaya. The current Brahma Sampradaya is known as the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Even though Lord Shiva appeared to preach Mayavada philosophy at the end of his pastime in the form of Shankaracharya, he preached the Vaishnava philosophy, Bhakti Govinda, Bhakti Govinda, Bhakti Govinda, Muda Mahe. He stressed worshipping Lord Krishna or Govinda three times in his verse and especially warned his followers that they could not possibly achieve deliverance or mokti simply for juggling and grammatical puzzles. If one is actually serious to attain mokti, he must worship Lord Krishna, that is Shripa Shankaracharya's last instruction. Here it is mentioned that Lord Shiva is always accompanied by his material energy. Material energy goddess Durga or goddess Kali is always under his control. Goddess Kali and Durga serve him by killing only the sort of demons. Sometimes Kali becomes so inferior that she indiscriminately kills all kinds of disorders. Here is a popular picture of goddess Kali in which she wears a garland composed of the heads of the asuras and holds in her left hand a captured hand in the right hand, a great khadga or chopper for killing asuras. Great wars are symbolic representations of Kali's devastation of the asuras. They are actually conducted by the goddess Kali. Shrishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktir Etaha. Asuras try to pacify the goddess Kali or Durga by worshipping her in material opulence, but when the asuras become too intolerable, goddess Kali does not discriminate in killing them wholesale. Asuras do not know the secret of the energy of Lord Shiva, and they prefer to worship the goddess Kali or Durga or Shiva for material benefit. Due to their demoniac character, they were reluctant to surrender to Lord Krishna as indicated in Bhagavad Gita. Nama dushta no muda podyante naradama maya apakata jnana asuram bhavam asuta. Lord Shiva's beauty is very dangerous because he has to employ the energy of goddess Kali. In another popular picture, the goddess Kali is sometimes seen standing on the prostrate body of Lord Shiva, which indicates that sometimes Lord Shiva has to fall down flat in order to stop goddess Kali from killing the asuras. Since Lord Shiva controls the great material energy, worshippers of Lord Shiva attain very great, very opulent positions within this material world. Under Lord Shiva's direction, a worshipper of Lord Shiva gets all kinds of material facilities. In contrast, the Vaishnava worshipper of Vishnu gradually becomes poor in material possessions because Lord Vishnu does not trick his devotees into becoming materially entangled by possessions. Lord Vishnu gives his devotees intelligence from within, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. For those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding that which they could come to me. Thus, Lord Vishnu gives intelligence to his devotees so that the devotee can make progress in the path that I want them to Godhead. Since a devotee has nothing to do with any kind of material possession, he does not come under the control of goddess Kali or goddess Durga. Lord Shiva is also in charge of tamaguna, mode of ignorance in this material world. His potency, goddess Durga, is described as keeping all of the energies in the darkness of ignorance. Both Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are incarnations of Lord Vishnu, but Lord Brahma is in charge of creation, whereas Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction, which carries out with the help of material energy. Goddess Kali or goddess Durga. And thus, in this verse, Lord Shiva is described as being accompanied by dangerous potencies, and that is an equivalent of Lord Shiva. Translation: Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod, second only to Lord Vishnu, is self-sufficient. although he has nothing to aspire for in the material world, for the benefit of those in the material world, is always busily engaged everywhere, coming by dangerous energies like Goddess Kali and Goddess Durga. So this is a little description of Lord Shiva, who will be giving the teachings to the Prajetas, because they met him when they were about to do their austerities, so he gave them their instructions. So he has to be very qualified. So his qualification is here stated with the word Atma Rama, that he takes pleasure in the self, not in material things. So this means he is detached from material enjoyment. He's accompanied by his Shaktis. Here he is also called Bhagavan, or Supreme Lord. And Bhava, which is another of his names. So he is here praised as being very powerful, knowledgeable, attached to the material world, which are also the qualities of the Supreme Lord. So actually he is also a form of Ishwara, but because he does not manifest as many powers as Vishnu, therefore he's put in a separate category. At the same time, he is not a jiva, a small particle. The Supreme Lord is one, whereas the jivas are many, and they're all individuals. So in this sense, Shiva is non-different from Vishnu. Just as the avatars are non-different from each other. But because Shiva manifests significantly less powers, therefore, he is put in a separate category. So in one sense, one should not degrade Lord Shiva by saying he is less powerful, because he is very powerful. He has great power and is actually in a different category from the jivas. Of course, he is also the servant of the Supreme Lord. Even though he is Ishvara, he acts as the servant of the Supreme Lord. So in this way, he is different from the other forms of the Lord. At the same time, he's different from the jivas, because he has an eternal body. He does not take birth with the material body. Brahma is born, usually, is born with a material body, and he has to die at the end of his lifespan. Shiva does not die. He simply disappears from the material world and is back in his spiritual world. So, he's in a different category completely. Therefore, he's also very qualified. So Prabhupada in the Prabhupada mentions that Brahma is in charge of the Sampradaya, and Shiva is also in charge of the Sampradaya. Of course, because of their exalted natures, they have significantly given teachings to the jivas. So we have these different Sampradayas coming from different devotees of the Lord. So Brahma is one and Shiva is another. These, of course, are Vaishnava Sampradayas. So we should not think that Brahma is cultivating worship of Brahma or Shiva is cultivating worship of Shiva. They're actually cultivating worship of Vishnu. So they are exhibiting their qualities as Vaishnavas. So even though in the popular world Shiva is worshipped by many people, he's actually worshipping Vishnu. He is a servant of the Supreme Lord. He is head of the Sampradaya, which teaches Vaishnava worship. So as Prabhupada mentions, the modern descendants of that is the Vallabha Sampradaya. So in this way we have the teachings of Lord Shiva preserved. So here we find him teaching directly, just as Brahma may give instructions, so Shiva also gives direct instructions.
in this particular place. Not the only place, he gives instructions in other places also. So he is highly qualified as a devotee to give instructions on the nature of the Supreme Lord and how to please the Supreme Lord with worship. So in other words, he also defines the Supreme Tattva, which is Vishnu, and the method to attain it, which is Bhakti. So in that sense, all the Sampradayas teach the same thing. They're not teaching anything different. But the because of the original teachers, therefore they are different Sampradayas. So here, Lord Shiva is described as Atmarama, Bhagavan, Baba, etc. And accompanied by his Shakti, who is Durga Devi. And of course in the first canto also it talks about the Gora forms, which means ghastly forms or terrifying forms, etc. So of course Durga herself is not so terrifying, but in the form of Kali, then she looks a little more grotesque because she has skulls around her neck and she's got a chopper in her hand and she's killing people, etc. But of course even we see Durga Devi has got weapons in all of her hands. She's got spears and tridents and bows and arrows and swords and whatever to kill the demons. So therefore, even though she may have like a ghastly aspect, she is simply doing her job as far as the material energy is concerned. And that is, what does material energy do? It enforces the law of karma. So whatever is happening because of karma is under the influence of Durga Devi. So we can say the punishments that she gives the living entities are like the little weapons she has in her hands. She gives different punishments to different living entities according to their various crimes. So therefore she is depicted as killing the demons, not the devotees. Only those who are sinful and are doing wrong activities, then she punishes them. So this is not actually cruelty, it is simply carrying out justice again, another form of justice. In this way she is doing her service to the Supreme Lord by instituting the law of karma. So for those who are asuras, of course, then she looks ghastly, because she makes them suffer. We have Shiva, and then we have, under his control, we have Durga Devi. These two are therefore in charge of certain aspects of the material world. Because of that, they look very powerful, so therefore people worship them. So we want to get rid of our karmas, then we worship Durga Devi. And then the master of Durga Devi is Shiva. So we worship Lord Shiva. So yes, it is true. Lord Shiva and Durga are in charge of this creation in terms of instituting the karmas and destroying the material world, etc. But, as I said, Shiva is simply a manifestation from Vishnu. So therefore, it is partially correct that they are controlling the world, but actually Vishnu is above everyone. So it is a partial vision to see that they, if one sees them as all-powerful. As far as material, yes, directly they do things in the material world, but we have to see beyond that. So beyond Shiva, the material world, then we see Vishnu, and Vishnu in causal world, and Vishnu in the spiritual world, and all the other forms in the spiritual world. So the devotee actually is interested in the spiritual world, not in what is happening in the material world. Supreme Lord has his agents in the material world, and they're powerful, but they're not the highest aspect of the Lord. So just as the Vishnu forms in the material world are not the ultimate aspect, so the Shiva form, the Durga form also, and all the Devatas are not highest aspects. They're controllers in some sense, but not absolute
So, therefore, ultimately, all the worship should go to the Supreme Lord, Vishnu or Krishna. So, though people may be attracted to Shiva and Durga because the material world is directly connected with them, the devotee will understand that actually we're not so much interested in the material world anyway. So therefore, let us go and worship the Lord who's beyond the material world. So people that have interest in the material world will be attracted to these forms who are directly connected with the world, just as they're also interested in devatas because they're also connected with the material world. So more powerful than all the devatas then are Durga and Shiva. So then some people worship them. So yes, correct, they are superior to the other devatas like Indra, but nevertheless, they are also inferior to Supreme Lord. So that is the picture presented in Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures. Those in the mode of ignorance tend to worship Lord Shiva and Durga. Of course, it is said in Bhagavad Gita that those in the mode of goodness worship devatas. So yes, and the people in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts, bhutas, and those in the mode of passion worship rakshasas. So those in the mode of goodness can also worship Shiva or Durga or any of the devatas, as I said, but without material desires. Only because it's described in the scriptures, yes, they will do it, but they don't do it with any material desires. And those who follow the Varnashram system, those in the mode of ignorance will be more attracted to Lord Shiva. So they will also worship Lord Shiva, but of course, they will have material desires to fulfill from their worship. And those in the mode of passion also may worship, but again, they have material desires to fulfill. And those in the mode of goodness will worship without material desires. Dasadev wrote Puranas glorifying Lord Shiva, Shiva Purana, Linga Purana, etc., Skanda Purana. And these glorify Lord Shiva prominently. So he wrote these to attract people to the worship of Lord Shiva, the Tamil Puranas. So he wrote these Puranas for those people. But Narada Muni said to him, this is not going to work in Kali Yuga. Because if you recommend things like this, then on the basis of the scripture, then they will say, I will worship Shiva, I'll worship nobody else. Huh? And they won't see the relative position of Lord Shiva in relation to Vishnu. So this is not going to work in Kali Yuga. So therefore, better you simply show that Krishna is supreme. And that's why he wrote the Bhagavatam. So, though they are glorified even in the Bhagavatam, at the same time we understand their relative position as far as worship is concerned. And in Kali Yuga, the recommendation is we worship Krishna. Yeah, expansion. Since he is like Supreme Lord, he has powers, so he can expand himself. And they're in charge of the different elements like water, earth, fire, akash, etc., ego. And they're in charge of different aspects of the material world.
These Puranas created and they could have been destroyed also.
What?
Because Narada Muni came and said these Puranas will create so much of trouble. But these Puranas are still preserved and they are created for trouble. So
why didn't you destroy the scriptures? Ask him why he didn't destroy the scriptures. Could have destroyed the Vedas too, could have destroyed everything. Because he defiled the Vedas, why did he just throw it all out? Yep.
Or maybe different people existing from the Vedas inherited the Vedas.
Well, yeah, Puranas were meant for the less intelligent people, Mahabharata also meant for the less intelligent people, Vedanta Sutra for intellectuals, etc.
But in Kali Yuga, of course, everybody's unintelligent, so basically they can't really understand the Nanda Sutra and the Vedas. You wrote these other works.
Four Sampradayas, we find that Brahma is being important with knowledge. But on the other hand, then women, how the Yashiva or Kumara, they are being just as four Sampradayas, one way Sampradayas. Initially, you see Brahma was important with knowledge. But other Sampradayas, when were they given this knowledge? Yashiva, Lakshmi, and
They must have some tradition in those particular Sampradayas of what knowledge was given, etc. I'm not quite sure, but they do have, they trace it back that Shiva gave to so-and-so, so-and-so gave to so-and-so, whatever knowledge like that. So there must be some particular bit of knowledge they got, which scripture it is, I don't know, but they do have some, they trace some scripture back.
To
Shiva, or to the Kumaras, or to Lakshmi, etc.
My question is between Shiva and the Lord. My question is between Shiva and Krishna.
Yeah.
How would they got it?
I don't know. We'll have to ask that some particular sampradaya. But because obviously Brahma got, and here we see in the Bhagavatam, Brahma gets from Vishnu or whatever, so obviously Shiva also must get ultimately from
Vishnu. Brahma
created Shiva. Yeah. Possibly. I don't know how they trace it back, the knowledge, and what particular knowledge they take. So we take, of course, from ours, we take the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam that way. But Madhvas will probably take something else. Yeah, they'll take some other thing. not the Bhagavatam from maybe the Vedas or something like that.
Before
Sampradaya's
mentioning
how
many religions are.
Well, apparently it's listed in Padma Purana, but that quotation is not there in the present editions of Padma Purana we have, though it was quoted by Valla Vijayabhushan and I think by Kavikarnapura in their works about. It's not, we look in the Padma Purana we have now, it's not there. So on the basis of that, some people criticize those statements. No, that's different. That's not a Vaishnava Sampradaya. This is a Vaishnava Sampradaya. That's the Vallabha Sampradaya, which is Vallabha, so he traces his lineage back to Shiva. Yeah. They'll have a picture of Shiva with Vaishnava Shiva on there. You look at the pictures, you'll see that sometimes. So, the original teachings may not be apparently so different, but presently, of course, we do see differences in the teachings, so therefore we get the different philosophies, like Shishadvaita, Advaita, and Vaita, Advaita, and this sort of thing, these different philosophies. So. The present sampradayas have quite different philosophies, even though they're all Vaishnava philosophies.
So there is some sort of evolution. And then Mahaprabhu came and then came from all these four sampradayas.
Yeah, there is always some, historically there is, if you want to trace it historically, yes. There is action and reaction taking place all the time. So one philosophy is expressed to counter another philosophy of some sort. So Shankara's philosophy was there to counter Buddhism. And Madhva's philosophy was, Ramanuja's philosophy was there to counter Shankaracharya's philosophy. But we see that he did it in such a way that he didn't really get too extreme. And then Madhvacharya's philosophy completely is extreme in terms of dualism. Like that. And then we have consolidation in Vedavada philosophy.
But they would not expect that. They wouldn't expect all of that.
Who?
Well,
so we say ours is the best. We don't accept them, but we follow our philosophy, that's all, in relation to the explanation. Of course, philosophical explanations are relative in one sense. As I said, they evolve at certain stages to explain in a certain way, to convince people. So not so much the philosophy, but the conclusion which is important. So the ultimate conclusions are the same, but the mood attached to them may be slightly different. Huh? So we have them worshipping Vishnu. So we worship Krishna. But of course, even Vallabha worships Krishna, and Nimbarka also will worship Krishna as supreme. So we see that many of the Sampradayas also worship Krishna as supreme. Huh? And then the Ramanujas and Madhvas, they worship Vishnu. So a little bit difference there. But, all Vaishnava, because it's basically understanding that there's a Supreme Lord, and a jiva who's dependent, and this material energy which is real but dependent also. So that basic philosophy, Vaishnava philosophy.
So then you come across
Sri Vaishnavis
or otherwise, would be
argued with them
also be
a objection? No, it's not very useful in one sense, because the argument should be with non-Vaishnavas. Of course, arguing itself is a waste of time in one sense. Arguing for arguing's sake. You know, the different types of vadas are there. So a real vada is to come to an actual conclusion. But that requires great skill and qualified persons. The other types of arguments are things like vitanda, which you just try to defeat the person no matter what. No matter what means you defeat them. Jalpa and Vipanta and Vitanda, these are the different types of argument where you're not considered proper, actually, a waste of time. So, if it is based simply on the aspect of trying to find truth, discover, find, that's okay. But very, very few people will actually are qualified to do that.
This very philosophy is evolved at different times according to the circumstances requirement. But ultimately it seems that the Vedavya Tattva is the final conclusion and that there's nothing more to talk about in philosophy. Now, does it mean that it's going to be the choice of an individual soul to choose any of these philosophies according to its maturity or how it
works? Yeah, according to their life, how they want to approach, that's all. Of course, it's only a philosophical explanation, that's all. It's ultimately the same word. Only a philosophical explanation of how to get there. In the spiritual world, there's no philosophy. So in that sense, it doesn't matter.
Well, suppose if somebody is taking one of the initiation in front of the Sampradaya, can you take it from another Sampradaya?
Technically, no. It was Vaishnava Sampradaya and it's bona fide.
There are some cases, somebody is taking initiation from the Jiva, and they've been told to their following Gaudiya Sampradaya.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, technically it's not proper, probably.
But
this is a term we use, but actually he's a little bit different from the other demigods because it's not, he is actually Ishvara.
So we have an example
that
a person has taken active initiation in Sri Sampradaya, fallen completely out of the glory. So when he goes to Sri Sampradaya festival, anyway, the glory is collected. He is ridiculed. When he comes out and then he's feeling very bad,
he's bad. Well, maybe you shouldn't go there then. They shouldn't go to those things if they're going to ridicule them. Why?
What is it? Vachula is meant to mention to me as Atma Rama. Is there any difference between Lord Krishna and Shura being Atma Rama, same as Atma Rama?
Well, it's a very general term. It's also used for Sukadeva Goswami, it's used for Jivas also. It's also used for Krishna, of course. It's just a term to say detached from material energy and completely detached, but it could be Nityasiddha, or it could be Sadharmasiddha, or it could be the Supreme Lord himself, referring to the Supreme Lord himself.
Is there a
thing
philosophy? Like here, philosophy is meant for one mind.
Yeah.
But he is meant for the
convince your intelligence.
Is it possible that there is further
evolution? Yeah, anything is possible.
because of the way society moves.
Whatever. Yeah, okay. Anything is possible. We don't know.
When one is taken shelter, they are given protection. When they are taken shelter. Here we see Durga, after having shelter, she kills her own followers.
Well, they're not following properly. They're not real followers. Like the in the case of Judd Bharat, where they actually were offering the devotees, so then she became angry and killed them all. So they were actually big asuras. So she kills the asuras. So those asuras who are devotees are not actually her devotees.
Thank you.